Welcome to Lift Leadership Podcast with Bobby Alger. Each episode, Bobby will share insights and tips from his over 25 years of church leadership experience. For new episodes and more information, please visit crossroadswinchester.com.
Welcome to our third podcast of 2021. I'm Bobby Alger, and my goal is to lift up your leadership. In the first two podcasts, the first one was entitled Selecting Loyal Leaders. And if you missed that, you might want to go back and review that and gain some insight about how to select people that are loyal to you and a part of your team that really works. In the second podcast, it was entitled, Are You Leading From Vision or From Values? We can actually lead from both or from either. And I shared about how when I started the church that I'm presently leading, that I started leading from values and then needed to switch over into leading with vision incorporating values. But there is a difference, and you might want to go back and review that one as well. We'd also love to hear from you whether or not we're hitting the mark of that things that we're sharing, I'm sharing from my experiences in leadership is actually benefiting you, helping you, maybe one or two thoughts that you're able to apply in your leadership setting. We'd love to hear back from you, so drop a comment or send us a direct message, whatever you have available to you. We'd love to hear from you so that we can get some feedback and to make sure that we're helping you and truly lifting your leadership. Today, the topic of the podcast is decision-making models. Now, some might call this leadership models, but I prefer to call it decision-making models because I've observed over the years that good leaders make good decisions and weak leaders make poor decisions. Now, there's reasons why strong leaders make good decisions, and there's reasons why weak leaders struggle in making decisions. But I've really come to understand that leadership is around making good decisions and carrying those out more than it is a leadership model of how you lead. It's really based upon decision making. Before I get into the topic, again, I've shared this on previous podcasts, but just want to give you a little background of myself. I grew up on a farm and then went off to college, came back from college, and worked for 2.5 years at a manufacturing company in sales. After that, I actually had a stint in building houses, to build a couple of houses, construction for a year, and then went to get a master's degree. I was married by that time. After that, came back to my hometown, where my wife and I joined a multi-site church, and we pastored there in that community for 6.5 years. And then felt like that we needed to do something else, and we moved an hour north and planted a church from scratch, where we have been now involved, and I've been primary leader here for 21 years. During that time, we also had a family business that we started for about 8 years. It was a lawn mowing business that's kind of a family deal that we operated, and then the church grew to the point that needed my full leadership and attention, so we again pawned that one off or sold that business off. So it's a little bit of background of where I come from, and maybe you relate to some of the things that I've shared, and it's helped to shape my leadership along the way and all the different experiences that I have had. So again, we're going to jump in for today for talk about decision-making models. And as I go through, I'm going to look at three different approaches here in decision making, and then I want to bring forth an integrated model that we have used in our congregation for 21 years, and it's really worked for us. And so I want to bring that forward at the end. It's kind of an integrated of the three that we're going to be looking at in distinction here this morning. The first decision making model I call Lord Over. And that is one where you make all the decisions. Nobody else does. The buck stops with you. And that is a model that's used out there that sometimes it's necessary. Like, for instance, when I started the church, it was necessary for me to make all the decisions. There wasn't anybody else. And yet, as we grew, I began to parcel out decisions that need to be made into different departments. And so sometimes you start with this kind of model because it's the only one you have. You're the only one there. If you're not in a startup situation, then you wouldn't necessarily have or need to use this kind of model. In the Gospels, Jesus talks about this one. He tells his disciples that you should not lead lording over others. He said that's the way the world does it, and you shouldn't do it that way. So Jesus was aware of this kind of model, and that's kind of where I get the name from, the lord over model. Now, before we dismiss this model as being a control freak and they just want to do everything themselves, I want to just show you a couple of positives with this kind of model, and I want to highlight the person of Moses. Moses was appointed by God to bring the people out of Egypt into the promised land, and he was the primary decision maker in everything that happened. He was a part of the greatest moving party that, to me, ever recorded in history. 600,000 men, plus women and children and animals and slaves. So they estimate about 3 million people. Can you imagine that moving party? And Moses made all the decisions. I mean, he decided the kind of where they would go, finding water, food, bathroom facilities. I mean, that just, to me, it just makes me tired thinking about all the decisions that Moses had to make. And so he's journeying into this process with these people, and his father-in-law showed up one day, kind of observed what he was doing, and he saw how Moses was just overtaxed with being the primary decision maker all the time, and he said, "This is not good," and he proposed another model, and Moses listened to him. And so they selected 70 men and gave them responsibility, and then Moses just took the challenging cases. So this model that we're looking at, the lording over, it's one that actually worked for Moses for a period of time, but then he got tired in the process. And we'll talk about that, what can happen when you adopt this model and only use this model. So there's both positives and negatives of this lord over model. The positives are you get to make all the decisions. And when you make all the decisions, you also place value on the decisions you make and the decisions you don't make. And so you're able to screen through the value of the decisions and what you make and what you don't. Others aren't involved. Maybe you don't trust them to make the decisions. Maybe your organization is young and people haven't gotten there yet. Again, there's many different reasons why you are making the decisions for your organization. The negatives are is that when you make all the decisions, you're conditioning your people around you not to think. They're leaving their brains at home because you're making all the decisions for them. And then this is what happens over time. It's what I listened to a podcast recently by Craig Groeschel, and he called it decision fatigue. And boy, when I heard this really, really hit me personally, because during this COVID period of time that we've experienced, our church was making rapid decisions every week. We were deciding with new equipment and new ways of communicating and what was working and what wasn't, and how do we care for our people and who's showing up and who's not, and who do we need to call and who do we need to visit. And there was just, it was really an intense time for me personally in leading the congregation. And so during this time, one of the staff members came to me and said, "Hey, you know, we're kind of having light attendance. Why don't we redecorate the foyer?" And I just immediately said no and walked away. And I then got alone and I thought, what in the world did I just do? You know, I shut down creativity of something that really our foyer did need to be redone. And so I recognized that I have decision fatigue. I'm just so much has crammed in there that I can't stuff another decision in. And so when I realized that, I went back to the staff member and said, "Hey," explained to them what it is. I said, "What are your ideas?" And they shared with me the ideas, and we ended up doing it. And our foyer looks amazing. It's fresh and inviting. And again, it's just an example of how personally that I, in making a lot of decisions, just shut down with decision fatigue. And if you make all the decisions for your organization, your company, and don't let anybody else share in that, you're going to experience decision fatigue. Even as a parent, I remember my youngest child, he wanted to do something, I forget what it was, and he pleaded with me to do it, even with tears. And I just said no. And then I walked away and I thought about it, and I thought, well, there's nothing really wrong with what he wanted to do. And so I went back to him and I said, son, I said, I'm going to change my mind about what I earlier said. You can go ahead and do that. But I want to let you know, it's not because you cried about it. It's because I had time to think it through. So we have to realize that when we make a lot of decisions, if you're a leader, you can really get wiped out over time. Let me recap of this decision-making model here, the first one that's called Lord It Over. The positives are you get to make all the decisions, all right? Number two, positive is you're not subject to others' clouded judgments because you're making them all. The third positive is you get to place value on the decisions that are made. It's not delegating that to others and their values, but you placing value on what gets made and when. Now, the negatives are that you're making all the decisions. That's a positive and a negative. The second thing is you're conditioning your people not to think. If you are deciding for them, they're going to leave their brains at home. The third negative that I see is eventually you will reach decision fatigue and you'll shut down your own ability to make sound judgments and the creativity of yourself and your organization. So again, a couple of positives and negatives of the Lord It Over decision-making process. The second one that I want to look at, I call the leech out. The leech out. Yeah, you've heard me. Just like a leech. It extracts from something else what benefits them. I don't really see a lot of positives related to this kind of decision making, yet I'm very aware that it's out there. In the business world, they call it the reward model. In other words, the person that's leading is only in it for the paycheck, the benefits, and kind of riding out until they can retire. That would be a leech out model. It's really built around them. They don't really care about the vision anymore. They don't really care about their people. They are just in it for themselves and making decisions that benefit them. And they're not really engaged in any creativity or any challenge in the company organization. It's just really looking at them. So I don't really see much benefits of this particular model in decision making. However, I realize that this is kind of a natural way of thinking when someone that has been successful in a leadership position, maybe in a company, and they're reaching retirement age, and the several years before they just begin to coast. They've done their job well, the organization is working well, the company is like clockwork, and maybe they're a little bit bored and they just begin to coast. Actually, I recognize that I had a couple of these thoughts recently. Been leader here of the church for 21 years. Things are going great. I've got a fantastic staff, and the congregation is engaging. It's life-giving. We're doing things that are blessing people and the community. And I realized, wow, I could just coast this thing out. And I stopped myself and said, no way. So we've jumped into a building program, depending upon, you know, whether we buy land or buildings. We could be in a 2 to 5 year process. It's just way beyond me or any one of us. I know it's going to be challenging. I know that I could just coast in the position I'm in, but I'm choosing not to. And so I realized that I had kind of adopted or allowed to come into me this kind of leech out mentality in making decisions. And I stopped it, because that's not who I want to be. I want to be engaged all the way up to whatever, whenever the end may be. And so that can happen, again, for us in a natural sense when we come to the end of our success or maybe retirement, that this leech out idea kind of begins to creep in, and it becomes all about us and not really about others. I worked for a family business for a period of time, and it was in the second generation. And really, as I look back, a lot of decisions that were made for that business were around the guy that was leading. He just made decisions to benefit himself. And I saw that later. I didn't see it at the time. And after I left, they sold the company. He sold the company. And there were 100 employees. It was very profitable, and they parceled out all their products to other companies. And I thought, why did he do that? Again, maybe he reached decision fatigue. Maybe he just began to bring on this leech out mentality. And now he's, I don't know what he's doing, but probably playing a lot of golf. But again, I just saw that happen in that company that I worked for as I look back. And so, as I mentioned, this leech out model doesn't have a lot of positives to it. I don't really see any in my point of view. If you have some that you see that I'd be welcome to, I would certainly welcome you to share with me, but certainly don't see any. I remember a story of a king in the Old Testament, and he had a difficult decision before him, and he actually said, you know what, I'm not going to make the decision. I'm going to let my son make the decisions after me. I thought, how pathetic. What a cop-out. You know, he was a leech-out leader. He just decided that he wasn't going to face this challenge that he could. He was just going to pass it on to his son and have him work it out the best way he could. And so this does happen in the leadership world. It happens in the business world. We have leech-out leaders, that the way they make decisions just about them. And it's not a pleasant place to work. It's not a pleasant person to be around when that is happening. And so I encourage you, if you see that mentality creeping in, get away from it. Jump into this next one, decision-making model that I'm going to talk about. And this is what I call the lead under model. Lead under. So far we've talked about the lord over, the leech out, and now I'm going to talk about the lead under decision making process. The popular name to this would be servant leadership. Probably one of the best examples that I ever heard of understanding servant leadership came not from the church, but from the business world, by a guy named Ken Blanchard. And Ken shares about servant leadership in a way that I never heard described. And he simply says this way, he takes the word leadership and he puts that first. He said, every good leader is called to develop the vision and to share it and to make it clear about how it's to be carried out. That's the leadership part. So you make decisions based upon the vision, and then you share that vision with your team and the organization. And then he said, now comes into play the servant part, where you as the leader come back around and support and encourage all your employers and your team to carry out their part in accomplishing the vision. And I thought that was so novel. I've never heard anybody put it that way. That in this lead under model, you lead first, but then you come back around and you get under, you support, you encourage those in your team and your organization to accomplish the vision. So your work's not done when you share the vision and make it clear. You're only half finished. You come back around and help the people that you are with to accomplish the vision that you have set out. Our church last summer had a man day. We roasted a pig. We brought our chainsaws. We cut down trees. We had a huge chipper that we put the branches in. And then we came back and ate barbecue pork sandwiches, and then we shot guns. I mean, that's the ultimate man day. I don't know how much more man you can get in that. So we had a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, but the host that we were working at their farm and cutting down a grove of trees, he had a guest from another nation, and so I was running the chainsaw, I was sweating, I was dirty, and he came up to me with his cell phone taking pictures, and I'm like, what are you doing? he said, I cannot believe you as the lead person in the church. I cannot believe you out here getting down and dirty with everybody else. He said, my pastor at home in the nation I'm from would never do that. And I thought, wow, that's just who I am and what I do. You know, I lead, but I get down and dirty with the people. And it's so caused him to be encouraged in one sense, but then reevaluate how his own pastor was leading when he recognized that his leader wouldn't ever get down in the dirt as I was doing. So I guess I actually blessed him and ministered to him in that way. So it is important at times that we're leaders of organizations that we get down and dirty with our people. I like the term lead under because what it communicates is that I'm leading, but I'm also supporting. And I think that is so key in how servant leadership works these days, that we are able to not only lead, but support and guide and help and troubleshoot along the ways. Now, in order for this model and the integrated model that I'm going to share with you in a few moments, in order for it to work, there's two key factors that are necessary, and that is trust and relationship. And without a degree of trust and relationship in this servanthood lead under model, it won't work as well. And that is extremely important. In fact, one of my mentors shares that nothing happens outside of trust and relationship. Now you think about it. If you have a strong relationship, what do you also have? Strong trust with that person. And if you have strong trust with an individual, you have a strong relationship. If you begin to weaken in your relationship, you're weakening in trust. If you strengthen your trust, you strengthen your relationship. And so the two work hand in hand, and it's really, really important to recognize that those two components are in this decision-making model. Let me just recap here the lead under model. Five things. I really don't have any negatives. I just have five positives. And the first one is you point the way, and then you come around and support others to walk in the way. Number two, the lead under leader gets down and dirty with their folks at times, not just staying away and clarifying and doing the vision, but we actually do get with our people to work it out. Number three is that in this decision-making model, trust and relationship is necessary in order to make it work, that we're thinking about others and not about ourselves. Number four in this lead under leaders is that this kind of leader knows their lane that they've been called to, and they don't step into others' lane when they delegate responsibility, but they set up a system where things are delegated and then they receive back from how the person is doing in their job. And the fifth thing that I think about in this decision-making model is that the leader is interested in leaving a legacy. They're not just in it to do their run and have the business shut down, but they truly are interested in longevity, a legacy that would continue on long after they are out of the lead position or out of the CEO or the chair board or whatever they're at, that they truly are laying a foundation that others can come in and alongside and up in order to have the business or the church or the nonprofit or whatever continue on even after their presence is gone. Now, again, I just want to reiterate one thing before I get into this integrated model, and that is that strong leaders make good decisions. It's not really about their charisma or even about their stamina at times. It's just about the fact of how they work through and decide the timeliness of how they make decisions and then the follow-through of those decisions that are being made. That's the evidence of a strong leader. And so I believe that what I'm sharing is beneficial if you're leading your family, if you're in a for-profit company, if you're a nonprofit a company, if you are leading a small group or just a group of people, that a small business, you all of these principles apply, and I believe that you can benefit from what I'm sharing in any one of those settings. Now, a weak leader, again, struggles to make decisions. You second guess yourself. You don't trust other people. And yet sometimes that's an internal thing that has to be worked through. It's not just due to external factors. But I want to encourage you to be strong leaders and have a good decision-making model so that you can, again, lead an organization that is thriving and has life to it. And others look in and say, wow, I want to be a part of that. And so as we jump into this integrated model, I want to say that this was really gifted to us by our parent organization that we're a part of, that really has a leadership school, and they begin to share this integrated model, and we've adopted it into our church and how we make decisions governmentally in our body, and it's worked well for 21 years. We've not had any splits, a few splinters along the way, but really, truly not. It's worked well. It's brought harmony. It's brought peace to the process. And so, therefore, I want to share it with you. Again, as I share it, you might have the ability to adapt your organization into this, or you might not. You might be in a corporate situation where things are handed down to you, and you may be more restricted and how you can adopt this, but maybe you can practice it personally, or maybe you have authority over your team that you can begin to integrate what I'm going to share with you into your team. The term that we use for this integrated model is called head and shoulders. No, I'm not introducing a new shampoo, but it truly is called a head and shoulders and body government. We call it government in our setting, but it really is a decision-making process. And so I went and drew a little sign here that you can take a look at what I've done. And obviously it's a person, and you have a named head, you've got shoulders, and then you've got the body down below. And so how does this all work together? Well, you have a named head. Again, we call that person various things in our settings. You might be a lead pastor. You might be a chairman of the board. You might be a CEO. You could be a president. You could be a father. You could be the term leader. So again, the head can be called different things, but you're where the buck stops. If there's a crisis or emergency that happens, people look to you. That would be the person that would be the named head, whether you have a title that reflects that or not. And so then after you have the named head, then you've got shoulders, just like in a body. And that shoulders are the team of people that are the closest to you that you rely on to help you make good decisions. And so the team, again, is called different things. Sometimes they're called a board. Sometimes they're called an advisory group. Sometimes they're called, your spouse. Sometimes they are called an elder board. There's many different terms that associate with a team that has been called around you to support you as the head or the lead person. And then below that, you've got the body, which is the rest of us, the head and shoulders, the body. And that would be, as evident, your employees, your volunteers, your children, the different people that work for your organization, your customers, so to speak. So again, that would be called different things in different settings. And so this integrated system is, how it works is that primarily, the person that's at the head brings the vision. Now, it doesn't mean that they are the ones that think through the vision fully. Sometimes it can have some input from the shoulders, or even something that's happening in the body or in the factory or in the workers that's brought forth. But the vision primarily gets shaped and communicated from the head. Now, after it gets shaped and brought forth, it's wise that the head then bring it to the shoulders, that would be the team, to get 100% buy-in. I mean, this is full ownership. This is what we're going to do. This is the vision we have, And I want 100% buy-in in this. And so it takes time to walk it through and talk it through and communicate it through. Then when you have 100% agreement here, then you bring it into the body, the rest of the people involved in your organization, and you begin to share it in that process. So really, again, as I mentioned, trust and relationship is huge in these levels. Now, I will say that what if somebody in these other categories sees a problem or maybe sees a solution? Do they have the freedom to say what they see? And the answer is yes in this model. In fact, somebody that's in your, working in your factory may see a problem that you as the chairman or the president or the lead doesn't see, doesn't know about. And they bring it up to their supervisor, that would be in the shoulders. And then the shoulders would bring it to the head and it would be discussed and it would be determined how to best work out this problem. And the solution would be brought down and then there could be peace and unity brought back into the situation. So again, it's how it works. In other words, anybody in any one of these areas can see a problem and bring it to the attention or see a solution and bring it to the attention. But when it happens, it always needs to start, be brought up or start up and then work down. And so again, this has worked really, really great for us. But again, it requires trust and relationship and also humility on the part of the leaders. One of the definitions I've heard of humility is one that I really like. It's confidence properly placed. If you're a humble person, you have your confidence properly placed in the right things, not the wrong things. And people that aren't humble basically have their confidence placed maybe in themselves or maybe in something that just damages the organization, the vision of the people. But when you're truly humble, you have your confidence placed in the right things that benefits others and blesses others and shares with others and helps them grow. Our as I mentioned, our church has been has used this model for 20 years, and it's really been great. Now, I will say one other thing is that what happens if the head and the shoulders get into an impasse? In other words, there's a pain in the neck that happens. What happens if these two can't agree? And that's where it's important that you have an outside court of appeals or some other organization that can help you get unstuck or get trust flowing again or relationship flowing again. And that's why we're in a parent company, that we have people above us that help us get unstuck at any one of these areas. Should we trust get broken or relationship get broken, that they come and help restore that so that we can have the life flow and the vision flow and the company grow as it's expected. I remember when I was on this multi-staff church, I was pretty busy. I had a full plate, and some of the other leaders got the idea that they wanted to do a tent meeting in the community, and so we discussed it and talked about it, and the senior leader brought it to a vote. They're like, all right, we're going to vote about this. So this was 18 pastors in the room, and so brought it to a vote. And so all in favor say aye, and everybody else raised their hand to say I'm in, but me. Said, those opposed, no. I raised my hand. And that's where I was at. And so I walked out of that meeting and I was like, what just happened? So I got alone and processed what I did. And what I realized is that I was causing disunity. And there wasn't any reason why I couldn't participate. It's just I was probably overloaded in what I was doing. And so I went back the next meeting and I said, guys, I rescind my vote. I am full agreement with what we're doing. I'm going to jump in and this is going to be a success. And it was. So it's just an example of how I was challenged at times when I wanted to create disunity at this, I was in the shoulder level, that I had to go back and work it through to say, no, that's not who I am and that's not who I want to be. I want to rescind my vote. I want to be in full unity and move forward in that way. So just to recap, head and shoulders here, decision making is that the vision is oftentimes birthed from the head, may get input from other people or other sources, but birthed from the head. And You want to make sure that when the vision comes forth that you have full agreement at your shoulders area. And then once it's processed and understood at that level, you bring it forth into the body or into your employees or into your volunteers and the rest. And people, you know, may not agree at that level, may not be ready to embrace it. There's people that there's people that resist change. They resist the new. And why do they do that? Well, there's a number of reasons why people resist new vision. Sometimes they just don't like change. Perhaps they're emotionally full. Sometimes people don't like change because they don't know where they fit in of the new vision that's coming along. And that's huge. You have to realize that everybody's now getting reshuffled. The deck's being reshuffled. And there's going to be new cards. And that's unsettling for people. So they resist the vision, but really they are not sure where they fit in. Sometimes they maybe see things because of previous experiences they've had of something similar. And they're just guarded about whether or not it'll really work. So sometimes that's going on. Sometimes they actually do have insight. They're resisting something because they do have insight that you need to pay attention to. And so it can be a number one of those things when you come out with new vision of why people might resist it. And then the last thing I want to mention about this integrated decision-making head and shoulders model is that it could get flagged along the way. And pay attention when people flag something. You know, if you've got one of your shoulders people in your team flagging it, find out why and find out what's happening. Don't just disregard to say, oh, they'll get it eventually. No, dig down a little deeper because it's more valuable for you to dig into why than it is to just automatically say, well, this is what we're going to do and do it anyhow. Now, having said that, once you reach agreement here, you don't need 100% agreement in the body. They'll come along. You have people that see it right away. They're the early adopters. They see it right away and they jump in. You have the late adopters, and they'll come along when the early adopters get it. And then you got the laggards, and you know they'll get it when the vision's done. You know, after it's done, and then they'll think it's their idea. So you got people in all different levels down in the body or in the organization. You don't need 100% agreement before you roll it out, but you do need it in the head and shoulders. That's vitally important in order to do that. One of the things that I've done in our church is we have a time where we bring new people in and explain what we believe and why we believe it and how to be involved and how we make decisions. And one of the things I've incorporated in is to give them an opportunity to dream of something they've always wanted to start. And we actually help them start something. We may not be able to, once it gets started, it may grow beyond us, and that's okay. But we just really believe that we want to help people dream and start new things. And so I've developed a little grid that they can write down their dream or vision or something they want to start and help them get started. And that's just kind of who my wife and I are. We're pioneers, and so we want to help other people start new things and have incorporated that into bringing people into our church setting or our organization, that they have the freedom to start something new and bring people around that. The other thing that that we do is that take the opportunity to allow people to express where they're at. And one of the things I've learned, and then I'm going to finish, and that is the difference between an ideas person and a vision person. An ideas person has a lot of great ideas, but they want you as the primary leader to do their vision. And it took me a lot of years to figure that out. I was like, man, this person's full of ideas. They must be a vision person. They were not, because they had all these ideas, but they didn't want to do it. The difference between a vision person is they have an idea and they know how to do it. They know how to rally people, and they know how to communicate it, and they just go off and do it. And I've learned over the years that how to determine the difference. Because you want to have people around you, especially people at this shoulders level with you, if you're a primary leader, you want to have people that are vision people, not ideas people. Because vision people get things done. And I've hired a staff that is vision people. We share in the overall vision of the church, but they have their departments, they have their areas, they take it, they do it, they report back to me things that are done. Sometimes they get in a challenge situation, and we talk through their challenge together, and we reach a consensus, and then they go off. Man, they are doing their vision, and I love it. I don't want to be involved in their vision, even though it's under the umbrella of the church that we're in. And so I really encourage you to recognize that distinction. You're going to have people to come along to you, particularly if you're in a nonprofit setting, and there are a lot of ideas, but will they actually implement those ideas themselves? Do they have the ability or capacity to do it, or do they just want to share their idea? Which you can say that's great. But a vision person is one that takes that idea, puts feet on it, rallies people around it, and goes for it and has great results. So I hope this has been helpful for you today. Again, love to hear back from you about things that I've shared in this decision-making model. Again, some would call it leadership model, that we've talked about three different types. You've got the lorded over, which is the one that makes all the decisions, and there might be a benefit for that for a while. Then you've got the leech out. I don't really see any positives for that, only in it for the reward, the paycheck, the retirement that is coming. Again, that idea can leech into us if things are working well and we're not engaged in a lot. Mentality can come into us and just begin to leech rather than really give. And the one that I'm proposing is the lead under. That is that you lead with vision, but then you get under and support your people, whether it's your team or whether it's a larger organization, to accomplish the vision that you've set up. And again, we pulled it all together with this integrated model called head and shoulders, where you have the head that's connected to the shoulders, that's connected to the body, built on trust and relationship that's flowing through the system, and again, has great results. So again, we'd love to hear back from you. Leave a comment, something that's unclear that we could help you with. Send us a way that you have been encouraged through this that will encourage us to be able to. And maybe you have a topic of something that you'd like to hear about, that you'd like for me to address, something you've encountered in your leadership. Again, let us know and we'll consider it. Until next time, again, evaluate your decision-making process and select the one that is right for you.